I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Sam Pets Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Hey everybody, and welcome to, actually that's low energy, I want to go high energy.
Do it.
Actually, do you know, do you ever like watch Nintendo Life videos?
No.
The host of that one is like this British guy, and every single video he goes, "Hello, lovely people." Should I just steal that?
Sure, just great.
For three words every episode, I'll be British.
No, I want you to keep. I want you to keep the accent up throughout the whole episode.
Okay, let's go. Hello, lovely people. Welcome to another episode of All the Small Games. It's me, your blighty old mate, Andrew Levins, and joining me on the other mic, on the other end of the can, the tin can, we have my friend of bygone two decades, Jonathan Valenzuela. How are you, lad?
Oh my god, I've made a horrible mistake here. Which setting switches this voice off?
Quick, put it on Spanish. He only knows seven of those words. The bit will be over sooner.
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. Welcome to All the Small Games, everybody. My name's Andrew Levins. That's Jonathan Valenzuela, just in case you couldn't understand over my thick, very, very good British accent. With an indie game podcast, every week we talk about all the indie games we've been talking about in the in the last week, and we got a very exciting episode because we're both talking about a pretty recent release of a game, a pretty big time indie game that came out this year called Chicory, John is talking about a preview of a game that comes out later this month that he had the privilege of playing.
I think it's later this. I thought it was, for some reason, I thought it was earlier, but yes, 20th of July. Yes, the privilege indeed of playing Death's Door,
which made it on my most anticipated from E3 when we did that E3 episode a couple of weeks ago. Devolver Digital are publishing it. I'm very excited to hear what you think of that game. John, do you have any other games that you want to talk about this episode?
Yes, I do. I have, I've dipped my toe back into Apple Arcade.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, I know. Been a long time between us talking about that. They recently released Legends of Kingdom Rush, which is a strategy game from the makers of the Kingdom Rush Tower Defense series. So that released about a week ago, maybe a little over a week ago, and I've been getting into it.
Cool. So Chicory, Death's Door, and that other one, Legends of Kingdom Rush.
Yeah,
I got it. That does sound a little bit word salad-y, but it works.
It is.
So before we get into it, it is officially past the halfway point of the year, John. The 5th of July we are recording this episode on, and it means 6 months, half of the year is over. That means we have 6 months to talk about the indie games that were. If I'm someone that wants to play all the best indie games that 2021 has to offer, what are some of your favorite indie games that have come out so far this year?
All right, in no particular order. It's funny, I had to go back through all the small games Tumblr to see what I've talked about this year.
We never shout it out. If you ever want to just get a great rundown of every episode with some beautiful artwork that we steal from other people, go to allthesmallgames.tumblr.com.
True. It is our least mentioned link. So contentious one to begin with, but Disco Elysium, the final cut. Okay. I know this is not necessarily a new game, but I feel like the re-release deserves some attention considering that it's, you know, fully voice acted now and really brings the game to life in a way that it didn't before. Little Nightmares 2.
Yep.
Kind of an obvious one from me. Huge fan of it at the time. Genesis Noir. I know some people found it a little contentious, and it certainly was a bit buggy on its release, but I think absolutely beautiful, kind of interesting take on a point-and-click adventure with a narrative that marries, like, detective kind of story with huge topics like quantum physics and stuff like that. So that was really interesting. Recently, I've talked about him, Critters for Sale, that like, super kind of creepy, weird, one-bit... like a psychological horror game I played, an Airport for Aliens currently run by dogs, or dog airport game if you're into brevity. Super, super funny, super weird game. And last three from my list, and I was saving these next two because I figured they'll be on your list as well. Aliha and Loop Hero.
Yep.
And then finally, you know, I'm previewing it right now, or in a little bit, but worth including Death's Door.
So spoilers for John's review in just a moment.
I hated it. No,
that good shit.
Yeah. All right. What's your list, man? Hit me.
So you got to cheat at the beginning of your list, so I'll cheat at the beginning of mine. The Pathless, even though it came out at the end of last year, is a really, really magical game that I know a lot of people slept on. You can play it on Apple Arcade, but don't unless you have the controller set up to your Apple TV. It's definitely a game that should be played with a controller. I played it on my PS5, and I loved it. So I just trying to remember which number PS. PlayStation.
Sony's new product is a question.
So that was a really, really awesome game. And then to games that actually came out this year that I loved, Blue Fire, which I feel like, I don't even know if you heard me talk about it much, John, because I feel like I was playing that the 3 weeks that you were having paternity leave from the podcast.
You talked about it when I got back, though, for one of them.
Right. That game, really, really special game. Like, definitely... clunky towards the end, and a few quality of life improvements would make it a much better play all the way through. But I think in terms of setting out to make this very cool, difficult like 3D platformer slash kind of like Metroidvania style game, I think they made something really special. So that's Blue Fire. Then I've got The Wild at Heart, which is a game that I got halfway through. I reviewed it a couple of episodes ago, and now with the kids on school holidays, I don't want to play. I mean, they would enjoy it, but I don't want to have to explain to Archie, hey, like, this is what's happened in the story so far, so we're playing different games instead. And then once the kids go back to school, I'll get back and finish that game. Been playing that one on Xbox Game Pass, really love it. Like you, I put Aliha and Loop Hero on my top lists. Been enjoying both of those. I mean, Aliha we both finished to completion. Loop Hero is a game that I always think I need to play more of, but it's unfortunately it's on my computer, and I just very rarely ever feel like playing games on my computer.
Worth mentioning, they have recently updated Loop Hero. They've added new cards in, or new terrain, new enemies, stuff like that. I think it tickled me immensely when you were playing it. Because you play it on your computer, it was kind of your, like, go-to while DJing.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I was able to play it while DJing at certain venues when I have my back to the wall. But I kept playing at gigs where I had my back to other tables of people or the bar or something like that. And unless they're like, oh, what weird, like, 16-bit DJ software is he playing?
It kind of looked, to be fair, it does sound like... It's Loop Hero. It sounds like DJ software.
Yeah. I've had no gigs lately because we're in lockdown, so not a good time to play Loop Hero for me at the moment. And finally, a game that I want to make sure everyone knows about is Kaze and the Wild Masks, the brutal kind of 2D platformer in the style of the original Donkey Kong Country games. I talked about that, you know, a couple months ago. And an indie game that really has kind of flown under the radar this year. I think is a lot of care and love went into that game and is definitely worth your time. And finally, just like John ruined his review from today's episode, I will ruin mine and say that Chicory is on my favorite games of 2021 so far list as well. But more on that later.
Yeah. There's one other thing. You messaged me this morning and told me to check out a link that you'd posted in our Discord. And I, being, you know, the dutiful co-host that I was, mm-hmm. clicked on the link and started reading this article. And Levins, my hair was blown back by what I was reading. Let's get into this.
Yeah, so look, this is definitely ties into the fact that Chicory, besides, you know, it's a rare time that we're talking about an indie game which is exclusive to the PlayStation. You can play it on Steam, but in terms of consoles, it's a PlayStation exclusive. And this comes, I guess, at odds with this conversation that people were having on the internet in the last week. People being numerous indie developers, namely, I mean, it started because someone called Ian Garner, who is the co-founder of a place called Neo Doctrine, and they publish all kinds of video games. But he basically started a big thread talking. He didn't want it without burning some bridges. He kind of just described a platform as Platform X. He said, "I will not be defining Platform X, but it's the operator of a very successful console and does not have Game Pass. So either people are like, "Oh, it's either Nintendo or Sony." He kind of went through all of the problems that he has with the platform and how difficult it is to get anywhere in terms of published, you know, like having people see that your game has been published on PlayStation. People worked out very quickly that it clearly wasn't Nintendo because, I don't know if you've ever looked at the Nintendo eShop, but Nintendo just lets anything through their eShop. Yeah. It is funny to compare these two things. Like, yeah, the PlayStation, there's an expectation that you're going to spend like $25,000 to get coverage, like in terms of like game placement in the PlayStation store, in the, like, you know, recently released thread, like on the page on their game shop. Whereas, yeah, Nintendo like let everything in, but if you are someone that checks the eShop every week, you'll just be able to scroll down like the 30 mostly completely shitty games just to see all the things that have been released since you last checked it. Whereas it's very difficult to do that with PlayStation. And so I feel like if you only had that as your only games console, you'd be missing tons of smaller games because they don't have the budget to advertise it on Sony's storefront. But Jay Tholen, who is the developer of Hypnospace Outlaw, and then another one called Dropsy the Clown. Is that a game?
Yep.
Yep, it is.
That's
cool.
That's a Devolver game.
Oh, right, cool. Is that out yet?
Yeah. Oh, it's been out. It's heaps old. Like PC game right. From years ago.
Well, he was not as subtle as Ian, and just was kind of like, I like PlayStation's that being the hardest to work with, and in terms of sales, it's easily the lowest of all of the consoles that we've released on. And lots of different indie developers were chiming in. Did you read through all of the all the article?
Yes, of course. I read through it all.
You can find a full kind of article written up about it on gamesindustry.biz,
the home of all games industry news. And business. Mm-hmm. Business. Yeah, read through the whole article. I found it interesting that, like, there was no counterpoint. There was no developers that came forward and were like, actually, we had a really good experience trying to get our game on PlayStation or working with PlayStation, etc. It was all just all these indie people just being like, yep, it's been a nightmare thus far. I'm in a position where I kind of, like, I see why PlayStation don't give a shit about indies, because it's not the indies that sell their consoles. It's the big AAAs. It's your Uncharted's. It's your all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the first party AAA massive games.
All the first party stuff. And I mean, even over the weekend, the developers of Returnal, Housemarque, PlayStation announced that Housemarque is now one of the Sony owned, is now a Sony owned studio essentially. But it's still shitty of them essentially. I've always felt that PlayStation or Sony makes decisions for PlayStation that are good for PlayStation Xbox makes Microsoft makes decision for Xbox that are good for the games industry as a whole.
Right. I mean, yeah, I guess only recently, I feel like the last couple years.
Like, look at something like Summer of Arcade, which began back in 2008. Like, they were championing indie games all the way back then, before ID at Xbox even existed. They were going out of their way to go, okay, let's find these cooler, smaller games and give them a spotlight. Because the more people you have releasing games and working in the games industry, the better the games industry becomes in terms of output. The more, like, you know, you get more people getting experienced, releasing quality games, that kind of thing.
I'll Whereas definitely just, give you Summer of Gaming, but name one thing that was, like, good for the wider industry that Xbox did between Summer of Gaming and Game Pass.
Making sure that there was... the games that were releasing on their console were releasing on PC as well.
Okay, yeah, all right. He's done his homework in his head. He knows what he's talking about, everybody.
Like, not
I don't even know what a British accent sounds like. Don't trust me.
not being like PlayStation is with their exclusives. And I mean, look, PlayStation have just now, like, Horizon Zero Dawn is now available on PC. They've got a long way to go before a lot of their exclusives are available on PC as well. But Xbox have been more happy to be like, yep, cool, that game that is a console exclusive for us, it can go out through our PC store. Prior to them having a PC store, it was fine for it going on Steam and that kind of thing. I want to make the argument of crossplay, but I feel like crossplay is a fairly recent thing as well. It definitely predates Game Pass, but still, like, it's definitely
there was a massive like win, I guess, when Xbox and Nintendo started being friends and offering crossplay in that regard. And Xbox were offering PC crossplay before anyone else as well. I think you're right.
Yeah. So I mean, it's one of those things. You know, I feel like I've pretty much proven my point here. I don't fault PlayStation for trying to do the best for their own console, but if PlayStation was the only console, it'd be a much poorer landscape for video gaming, I'd say.
Yeah, but I think you could argue that if any of the consoles were the only console, it would be a much poorer landscape for gaming.
True.
Yeah.
But
it is interesting kind of seeing, because, you know, for years and years, indie games, you played them on PC. Then Xbox, I guess, somewhere of gaming, pushed them to consoles. And then PlayStation kind of tried to get lots of indie exclusives around the same time as that. And then I remember there was lots of, around the era of the Wii U, a lot of indie developers were expressing concerns about how difficult it was to work with Nintendo, putting indie games on the 3DS and when the Wii U. So they started basically a division of people to work on getting more indie games on the Nintendo consoles, and which is why there's quite a few added at the end of the eras of the Wii U and the 3DS. But at the same time, the clear winner of the consoles, like Xbox 360 is probably the winner of that generation in terms of getting indies on consoles. Then mm-hmm. it's the clear, like, winner of the console to play indie games on is the Vita after that.
Yep, okay.
The Vita really, really, like, I don't know, it was just, that was where you played, you know, Rogue Legacy. That was where you played Guacamelee. All of these, like, indie games were made for the Vita, and, you know, a few of them are still locked to that platform. It's almost as if, like, Nintendo saw what the Vita was able to do as, like, the home of indies, and that paved the way for Switch being, like, the undisputed king of indies when it comes to playing them on console. And in that article, like, multiple devs say, like, yeah, no one, like, the console that we sell the most games on is the Switch. No one can hold a candle to that.
That's true. I mean, I speak from semi-experience with Death Squared. We did middling sales, and then the Switch came out, and the Switch outsold all other consoles it was released on, including PC, in like the first 2 months.
Yeah,
Which I think has a bit to do with the fact that it's a lot better now, but during the first release during that first couple of, maybe 2 years release of the Switch,
we weren't... Yeah.
Exactly. There weren't that many AAA games. There weren't, you know, you had Legend of Zelda, Breath of the Wild, you finished that, you finished Super Mario Odyssey. What the fuck else were you playing in the meantime? So people, I think, went to indies as well.
Now I would say that indies, there are months where the indies carry the Switch, I think.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like, I don't think Mario Golf or Super, what is it? Super Mario Golf Rush or what's it called?
Mario Golf Super Rush, obviously. God.
Jesus. Okay. But I mean, I don't think that's necessarily like a, oh my God, this is the best thing I've played this month. There'd definitely be one or two indies that came out that were like, yep, that's a much better or more interesting gaming experience.
And it's definitely not like Nintendo take that for granted either. Like, they put the most effort into, you know, regular showcases of only indies with their Indie World showcases, you know, multiple times throughout the year. I think ID at Xbox a close second, and then PlayStation has like a blog and the odd kind of like inclusion in some of their state of plays. But yeah, definitely not the same amount of attention given to indies that the other platforms give. And so it isn't too much of a surprise to see someone like the Hypnospace Outlaw devs, you know, complaining about how hard it is to work with them for a console that they love playing games on. It must be a bummer.
I would like to shout out Xbox as well. The recent Summer Games Fest, whatever the hell you want to call it, so many of the games that were featured during that had demos on Xbox.
Yeah, I missed them all. It was like the shortest window. Maybe this is why I'm like not letting you not letting you give Xbox the credit. Yeah, if they added two extra days to their demos, we wouldn't be having this argument.
It's funny. It was what, like Sable was one of the demos.
So bummed I missed it. Oh well, but I know I get the full game when it comes out. Yeah,
part of me is like, I don't need to taste the game. I know it's going to be fucking great when it comes out. I'll just wait for the full release, which is honestly like 2 months away now.
But John, we're indie game journalists. We got to be ahead of the head of the curve.
True, true. I'm playing the new dad card again.
Yeah, you're allowed that for at least the next 7 years.
Yeah, I just hide behind Olive anytime. It's like, you should have done this. Just pull my baby up in front of my face.
She vomits.
Oh, she does that so well these days.
Yeah, but yeah, it was funny reading that article, you know, kind of criticizing PlayStation's attention to indies the same week that I started arguably their best indie exclusive in as long as I can remember, Chicory.
Hot damn, great segue. Let's do this.
Yeah. So, Chicory. It's called Chicory, A Colorful Tale. And man, it's a pretty much a who's who of indie game staff working on this game. It is the latest game developed by Greg Lobanov. Do you remember him from any particular beloved All the Small Games title of past?
You damn straight I do. That's the mastermind behind Wondersong, baby.
Yeah, and I know he's made something else like... he has a website that used to be called Dumb and Fat Games. Actually, it is. If you go to dumbandfat.com, that's Greg's website. And he made one called Coin Crypt, which looks really cool. I've never played that before.
Okay.
He has he's kind of like Terry Kavanagh, who is someone we're going to be talking about in a Patreon exclusive episode very soon, because we are currently playing through VVVVV. And Terry Kavanagh makes like a new game a month, it seems like. I don't know if you've ever been to his website. My God, he has a lot of games. Greg Lobanov has maybe over 10 games that he's made in the past with great names like Super Goo Goo and Phantasmaburbia and Pollution, Doubloon.
I like Cowboy Killer. Yeah, one word. Too.
Yeah. So he's been making games for many years, and this is his most ambitious game yet. If you liked Wondersong, you will feel very at home playing this game, in which you play as a janitor who works for Chicory, and Chicory is basically the wielder of a magic brush that brings color to your world. And one morning you wake up and all the color's gone, and so is Chicory, but her brush is outside her room. So you, a lowly janitor who's just optimistic and beautiful, you're also a cute little dog. She takes the brush.
You're burying the lead here, Levins. Yes, the cute dog thing, so cute.
I think because this originally was called, when they were developing it, it was called a really cute name. Oh, yeah, Draw Dog. That was the name of this working title of the game.
Nice.
So you basically pick up the brush and you start a big adventure to bring the color back to the world and find out what took it away to begin with. the other people working on this. We have Madeline Berger, who's an environmental artist who worked on this game. We have Alexis Dean Jones. I don't know if these names mean to anyone. I think they're all relatively, like, you know, this is maybe the first big game they worked on. The majority of them are Canadian. And then we have M. Halberstadt on sound design. And one person that I was very excited to see on the credits for this game is the music was done by Lena Rain. And Lena is responsible for the incredible, I would say, like, definitely top three best ever game soundtracks for me. And that is the soundtrack to Celeste. That's a soundtrack, one of the few video game soundtracks that I can just put on, and besides the odd maybe slightly too hectic moment in that soundtrack, I can put it on at like dinner or something like that, and everyone will have a damn good time listening to that beautiful soundtrack. And Lena has not held back the greatness for her score on Chicory either. It's so good, and just one of the many reasons that make this game so beautiful, because you do control the dog, like, from like an isometric kind of viewpoint. You're walking around. I should say the first thing you do is you're asked what your favorite food is. And so I'm playing this with my son Archie, who is 7 and on school holidays. And last week I mentioned that, like, all he could talk about and think about was a very fun party game called Boomerang Foo. And so after many, many days of playing that and only that, I was like, Archie, we're playing a new game today. It's called Chicory. He said his favorite food was burgers, and that ends up becoming your character's name. So the dog janitor who wields a paintbrush, her name is Burgers, and everyone else in the town are, like, you know, very cute animal creatures that all have the names of food. So, you know, you'll meet people named quinoa or corn or, like, like, just name a food. That's what all the foods are in there. We met someone called Achiote the other day.
Chicory is a food in itself.
A root, right?
Yeah, a flowering plant of the dandelion family, blah, 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 blah. There's coffee. You can make coffee from chicory.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We played... So, controlling this game, one of the joysticks moves your little dog around. The other joystick moves the paintbrush. So... it's like an isometric viewpoint where you're moving the dog around, like classic adventure game style, and there's all kinds of puzzles around you, and majority of these puzzles are solved with paint, because when you squeeze the trigger on the controller, you push down and you paint, and you have multiple colors that you can cycle through. You unlock different brush shapes, and you can just paint the environment around you, no matter where you are. You can, you know, do designs, you can hold it down and color everything the one color. It's super fun, but also there's a lot of puzzles that you can solve with paint, by painting the you know, different plants and things like that around you. It'll give you platforms or take things away. It'll unlock bombs, all kinds of fun things you'll discover in your journey. You can play this in co-op mode, where you control, player one controls the dog and a paintbrush, and player two also controls a paintbrush. And so they can help out with all the puzzles, or they can just like, if you have a kid who, you know, just wants to play a game while you can just give them the paintbrush and they can just paint around you while you do the adventure game, or they can help you play, which is what Archie is doing. And all it took was 20 minutes of this game, and he is so hooked. We're a couple chapters in. The second chapter took us 2 hours to get through, because we are both stupid completionists who are like, you know, if we see a treasure chest on the screen, we are figuring out how to get to that treasure chest, and we are unlocking all those extra hats and dresses that you can unlock in this game. It is so good. It is so cute. It has that same gorgeous writing that Wondersong had, but I think even better. I think it's a better written game.
Ooh, damn, okay.
Than Wondersong. Explores similar themes of, you know, living up to an idea of someone in your head, and like realizing that they face the same amount of fear and self-doubt that you do. And you meet other characters in this world that are, you know, even though it is like this, you know, magical video game world, you know, they have pretty relatable problems that, especially if you are someone younger playing this with someone, like, it's going to make such an impact. It's really cruisy to play. The game, the kind of bosses that we've gone up against so far, they're not too difficult. And you certainly, if you do one of the, if you get hurt, you don't die. You just kind of, like, the screen flashes and you just have to do like a very small section of the fight again. So it doesn't make you go back to the beginning. It's not very punishing at all. It's a, like the game, the boss fights almost remind me of like Undertale in a way, where it's like about avoiding the attack more than it is about attacking yourself, because you are wielding a paintbrush. How much damage could you possibly do?
So what sort of bosses are we talking though? Like, is it
we're talking
other
about
people
a
in the
gigantic
town?
Eye because okay. there's a corruption that's taking away all
right.
the colors, and so you fight said corruption by exploring through the land, accessing new areas, entering a weird creepy tree, and then fighting an eye monster. And you paint directly in their eye.
Naturally, of course.
Take that, you stupid eye. Yeah, man, I love this game. It's a lot longer. I forgot who was making it until like after I played a little bit of it. I was like, oh, that's right. This is the new game by the Wondersong guy. Do you remember that, like the Wondersong game? When you first start it, you're like, oh, this is going to be a fun 3-hour adventure. And then I feel like that was like 12 hours.
I think easily. Definitely over 10.
Chicory's are even longer. Especially if you want to collect all of the different fun things you can collect in this game. You can collect outfits. You can just pick up trash. And for whatever reason, it's like, hey, you've picked up 17 pieces of trash. I don't know why I'm picking up trash yet, but I hope there's a point to it. You also got to find lost kids.
I would posit that maybe the reward of picking up trash is teaching Archie that it's good to pick up garbage and keep things clean.
I would say the majority of people that play this game are going to be in their 20s and depressed. They don't need to think about picking up garbage.
Yes, they do. Their houses are probably disgusting. Clean your house, people.
Clean your house, depressed 20-somethings.
Yeah. That just flashes up on screen at the end of the game.
Yeah, perfect. But man, it's delightful. It's a shame that it is locked to... I'm pretty sure it's on PlayStation 4 as well. But if you play it on PlayStation 5, there's a few cute things that the PlayStation 5 controller does. Like whenever you change the color of your brush, the controller flashes that color with its LEDs.
That's cool.
And I haven't noticed any particularly exciting HD rumble, but I'm expecting something. It makes some cute noises as well, like fun painty sounds. That kind of stuff is really great. It makes it a bit more immersive.
Can confirm PlayStation 4.
Okay, great. So yeah, if you've got a PlayStation, like fucking let your voice be heard that you are interested in playing indie games on PlayStation, because this one is really special. And I feel like all of the consoles should be as excited about indie games as they are about AAAs and third party. Like it's just the healthier all of those things are, the better the better off gaming is in general. You could be playing this on Steam, John. You'd love it. I imagine a year from now it'll be available on Switch and Xbox as well.
Fingers crossed. Hopefully they don't have complete console exclusivity.
But if they do, they have to put the dog in what was their horrible attempt at making a Super Smash Brothers PlayStation game?
Oh, yeah.
Battle All-Stars or something?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, well, put the dog in that. And all will be forgiven, Sony.
Oh, published by Finji. That's cool.
Yeah, so published by Finji as well, who gave us Night in the Woods. Is that what it's called?
Night in the Woods, Overland, Tunic, whenever the fuck that comes out.
Hey, man, take the time. I think that game is going to be super big when it finally comes out. Like, you know, it's an extremely small team working on a, very gorgeous 3D, but like, you know, isometric Zelda adventure style game. I imagine there's going to be so many crazy mechanics in that game when it comes out. I'm very excited for it.
Wilmot's Warehouse as well. Also worth a mention. Did you say that you and Archie got into that one?
Yes, we loved it until it got hard, and goddamn does it get hard.
Nice.
I would say, I was going to say don't play that with a 7-year-old, but I also I reckon don't play that with anyone, because as a single player, I think you can accept being harsh on yourself for doing something wrong. But it's so taxing. Like,
it's so based on you making particular decisions and remembering said decisions Like when we've just, you know, it's like an anchor. Does that go under tiles that are blue or tiles that are related to the sea? Like you need to be singularly focused in the decisions you make in Wilmot's Warehouse. But yeah. I'm glad that Archie enjoyed it up until it got difficult.
We loved it, but God, it got hard. Fingy are a great publisher, and this is just one of the great games they've published. One of my favorite games so far of the year, one of Archie's favorite games as well, Chicory, A Colorful Tale. It is like absolutely a cure for lockdown blues game as well. It's really, really pretty and just sweet. I couldn't recommend this more, man. This is going to be in my, you know, very, very close to the top of my list at the end of the year.
I'm trying to remember if Wonder Song got dark.
In terms of like, you know, that bard had to fight through a lot of like, you know, bad feelings that either he had it for himself. Or he was always pretty happy-go-lucky, but I think there was one moment where he was sad. I remember he can't sing in it. He'd be like, his voice
is
really
flat.
Yeah.
And he definitely, like, other characters definitely just heap shit on him throughout the game.
Yeah. Greg Lobanov, he got some great ideas for games. I mean, Wonder Song, you know, being a platformer that you use your voice to solve puzzles, the Chicory just takes that, you know, interesting game mechanic to solve puzzles to like another level. There's so many more environmental things that you have to solve, and I think the possibilities are a lot greater too. It's just very cool. Love your Chicory.
Sweet.
Thanks, Chicory. You're doing great out there.
Absolute huge thumbs up for Chicory, A Colorful Tale.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
So I've got two games to speak about. I think let's save the best for last. So I'm gonna whip into Legends of Kingdom Rush right now. And I agree with you, that is a mouthful of a title. They could have just called it Kingdom Rush Legends. Mm-hmm. If you're listening, Armor Games, think about it. Just, you know, have a think about it. Sorry, not Armor Games, Ironhide Game Studio. Ironhide. So,
Ironhide is Armor, right?
Yeah, I think they started on Armor Games, which...
Oh, no, I mean like the actual, like, if you had an Ironhide, you would use that for armor.
Yes, Levins.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, you know, no one should blame me for your confusion.
Okay. Ironhide Games are famous for making the Kingdom Rush series, which is three games that kind of really defined what excellence is in tower defense. From a gameplay point of view through to a design point of view through to a story point of view, the Kingdom Rush tower defense games are absolute must plays if you own a mobile phone, in my opinion. Love those games. They've ported them to pretty much everything now, I think. Like, you can get them on Switch, you can get them on PC, etc., etc.
They also, many, many iOS generations ago, made a Kingdom Rush brawler, which before...
Oh, really?
Yeah, before... what's that? Or maybe it was around the same time as... what's the one where you play as the Knights? It was a Xbox Summer Games Fest, one of the
Castle,
you know,
Crashers?
It reminds me heaps of Castle Crashers, yeah. I loved it. It was on...
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Anyway... Oh, they also made Clash of the Olympians, Kingdom Rush. They had a free Flash version, etc. Anyway, I'm just looking at their website now for shits and giggles. But Kingdom Rush, Kingdom Rush Frontiers, and Kingdom Rush Origins, three incredible tower defense games that I highly recommend. But what they have released recently on through Apple Arcade, and it looks to be Apple Arcade exclusive at this point in time, is Legends of Kingdom Rush. So what they've done is taken characters from Kingdom Rush, not even characters, like units that you use in Kingdom Rush, and brought them into a turn-based strategy game. Now, I got to admit, I have a bit of a bug for turn-based strategy after Into the Breach.
Yep.
That definitely, you know, kind of whetted my appetite and made me interested more in turn-based strategy.
Have you ever played the Mario and Rabbids game?
I haven't. It's still in my Switch case.
You would absolutely love that, dude.
Yeah, I should get into it, especially since they've announced another one. It just sits in my Switch case for one day when I really need it. But there's always something else to play on Switch. Going back to our previous discussion about how great Switch is for indies. It's definitely like it kind of fits in with the story, the overall story being told with the Kingdom Rush series. There's a bit of like an ongoing story for all the games. You put together a team of three characters, one of which is kind of a hero unit, and there are four hero units that you can unlock in the game that all tie into the story, and then two support units. And the support units are drawn from enemies and allies that you might have used during the Tower Rush game. So there's like an archer, for instance. There's a sorcerer. There's a witch doctor. There is a Sasquatch. Each of these units kind of has their strengths and sometimes their weaknesses. Like the Sasquatch is an incredibly powerful melee fighter, but can only move one tile at a time. So, you know, there are a ton of different combinations that you can put together for your team that can have tactical advantages and disadvantages. Also, if you like, it is very much worth going into the explanations of each of the units you have, because some of them might have like abilities that will kind of complement other units' abilities. So it might be, you know, you might have a unit that can poison an enemy when they attack it, and then another unit might have a special where it's like, if you attack a poisoned unit with this special, you'll also set them on fire as well. So you can kind of look to create these like synergies between your characters that really give you a tactical advantage. The setup, so each there are currently three areas, I guess, that you can play through in the game. And it shares a lot of DNA with the way that, like, I call it, or to me the most familiar, or the first time I've encountered this is Slay the Spire. So you know on Slay the Spire, when you go off, you're playing a game of Slay the Spire, you're working your way from one end of a map to the other through a branching kind of set of paths.
Yep.
Each path, like, whatever you finish in terms of health and stuff like that, that's how much you have for the next battle. So on and so forth. So it uses that kind of setup for each of your adventures, where you'll be on a node, you'll have three nodes to choose from. Your choice might be a battle, and it'll show, like, with a little kind of figure, what you'll be battling. So, like, is it orcs? Is it, like, snow wolves? Is it spiders? Is it cultists? That kind of thing. So you can kind of make a decision based on what your party makeup is of, like, oh, I'm much better at fighting orcs with this team than I am fighting the more magically minded cultists. I'll take that route. There's a weird, a dice-based element to some of the nodes. So you'll rock up and it'll be like, you're in a cave. Suddenly there's a cave-in. Can you, like, you know, what do you do? And you'll have options based on who's in your party, essentially. So it's like, if you have a barbarian in your party, it'll be like, use your strength to pull the rocks away. Or if you have an archer, it'll be like, quickly run under the rocks and get out of the way of them, sort of thing. And based on who you choose, it'll roll a dice. And the dice has stars and crosses on it. If you get a star, you're successful. If you get a cross, you fail. If you're successful, you might score some loot or some experience points. If you fail, you will probably lose health, which can, towards the end of these areas, you're absolutely gasping for whatever bit of health you can get, to be honest.
Right.
Just like the other Kingdom Rush games, the overworld maps are filled with, like, all these fun little sort of visual Easter eggs for you to look for. Like, there's one level that's based in the mountains and it's all snowy, and on one side of the map there is a ski lift, and the ski lift constantly has, like, if you sit and watch it, like, Finn and Jake will go past on one of the chairs, and for then real? Like, a predator and an alien will go past, and all these little, like, cultural sort of references.
Oh, that they if haven't you... paid for. So, like, homages to them.
So yeah, sort of like, you know, characters that look enough like them. They're not obvious. Yep. They're not licensed. It's just little nods to them, essentially. There are some that are based around what are the achievements? So yep. Like, again, in the snow level, there'll be a wolf in one part, and if you tap on the wolf, it explodes and turns into the thing. As in, like, John Carpenter's The Thing.
Oh, right,
cool. That gross kind of alien, not Marvel's The Thing. And then it'll be like, achievement, you found the mutated snow dog in the wilderness area. So again, like, that was always something I loved in the Kingdom Rush games, is kind of looking around the overworld map with a bit of an eye for detail, and finding all the funny little jokes that they've included in there. I was off to a slow start with this game, admittedly, because it takes you a little while to unlock a lot of the different enemy units. The way you unlock them is just by playing, essentially. Like, as you unlock achievements, you'll unlock units that go along with them. So yes, from that slow start, though, as I kind of kept chipping away at it, I slowly more and more was like, hey, this is actually super fun. I'm really enjoying my time with this game. I'm enjoying thinking tactically. You know, whereas I used to get my ass handed to me in these battles, now I can pretty reliably make it all the way through each adventure to the end and take a decent run at the boss. And there's one world kind of off to the side of the map that, you know, they'll expand at some point. And much like other Kingdom Rush games, I feel like they're just going to keep updating this guy over and over again until it's like, tons of content, essentially. I'm sure they'll add new units, they'll add new adventures for you to go on, all that kind of stuff. If you have Apple Arcade, absolutely grab this game. Like,
yeah, cool.
Pause this episode right now, flip out of your podcast app, go download it. You will have a great time with this, I guarantee it. Yeah, so that is Legends of Kingdom Rush. Now, let's get down to business. Let's talk.
Oh, I thought you were going to sing that song. Do you know that song? Let's get down to business. It's like a new dance song. It's awful. If you walk into any gym right now, it's playing.
If you walk into any gym right now, you are defying lockdown laws. Don't do
Very
it.
True.
Yeah. Death's Door. So I was lucky enough to get a preview code from the good folk at Devolver Digital to give this game a bit of a burl before.
Yeah, so it doesn't come out. July 20 is when it comes out.
July 20, yes. I have a whole fucking thing here.
It comes out Death Door, Xbox and Steam.
Xbox and Windows, yeah. Steam. I'm absolutely sure this has to come to. It must come to Switch at some point. It'd be insane if it didn't. And thus probably PlayStation as well.
Yep.
Developed by Acid Nerve. Acid Nerve made previously a game called Titan Souls, which shares a bit of the same DNA with Death's Door, in that it's all about these big boss battles that you go through. But whereas Titan Souls was purely boss battles. Death's Door has more of a, like, you play through a level with other enemies and then wind up fighting bosses as well. Also, there are a two-person team from Manchester in the UK.
Acid Nerve is the developer, right?
Yeah, Acid Nerve is the developer. From Manchester in the UK, where your favorite and best accent comes from. published by Devolver Digital. So, Death's Door sees you playing as a little crow who works for a sort of bureaucratic institution that are basically perform the function of reapers. They go into the world and take the souls of people who have just died. However, you are the sort of world that you enter from memory. I need a refresher on the story. I need to go back and replay the preview again. But from memory, the world that you reap in, animals live, or, you know, the inhabitants live for a lot longer than they should and grow a lot larger than they should as a result. So the souls that you're reaping are particularly powerful souls. You go out on a job to get a soul. And the thing is, you are basically kind of not, you know, the job only finishes once you bring the soul that you were intended to go get back. However, this job that you go on, you as you go to take the soul, suddenly it's stolen from you. I cannot tell you more than that. I am kind of like, the embargo does involve me not revealing massive amounts of story detail. I kind of feel like I can say that one because I think it shows up in the credits. But I will say...
In the trailer, you mean?
Trailer. Sorry. This game is fantastic. One thing that's leapt out at me, like, let me get my thoughts in order. The combat in this game is fantastic. This is the kind of game where you need to have... The combat makes or breaks the game, and these guys have nailed it.
It looks so smooth in the videos I've seen so far.
It is so smooth. It feels so tight and so crisp.
You're a crow with a sword, right? He has a sword?
You're a crow with a sword. You can pick up an umbrella at the beginning of the preview and fight with the umbrella as well. But the umbrella does half the amount of damage that your sword does. So I stuck with sword, but it would probably be fun to do like all boring umbrella run or something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so crisp. You have a sword. You have a bow and arrow as well. It's got a dodge roll, and the dodge roll feels like... I've played plenty of games that have a dodge roll, and the dodge roll just doesn't, like, it doesn't hit as precisely as you want it to, so it feels kind of useless in combat. Not the case here. The dodge roll works perfectly of, like, get in there, smack your enemy a couple of times, get the hell out. I definitely suffer from the sort of affliction with these kind of games where it's like, I don't need to dodge out of the way. I just need to run up to the enemy and hit them heaps of times. Oh, I'm dead. So I've kind of been gradually learning to use the dodge roll. So the combat's fantastic. The world that they've created is fantastic, like, just incredible. It's not necessarily like stunningly beautiful. It's just all the elements of it are so well crafted that it feels great to be in. The little bureau of death that you are in at the beginning, it's all in black and white, except for, like, I think the red of your tie or your sword. That's the only splash of color on screen. And then when you go out into the actual world, you get a full color world then. That is one of the examples of, like, great design choices that they've made in this game. I'm currently in an area of the game where I'm in a mansion. I won't give away any more story details than that. But I just noticed, because I played a little bit before I came to work this morning, I noticed that there's actually reflections on the marble floor of this mansion. Like, stuff like that where they didn't, you know, it doesn't necessarily make or break the game that they have this thing. But once I noticed it, I was like, shit, that's such an amazing detail to have. Like, in terms of how they've kind of put this game together. I think I sent you a screenshot of the game, which was, like, they obviously have a sense of humor about them, because when you're going into this bureau, you have to pass through a security checkpoint, and the security guard's name is Ball Plot.
Great.
For those who aren't familiar with garbage movies, there's Paul Blart, Mall Cop. I've run into a character who has a pot of soup for a head. Already great character design there.
Perfect.
But I must admit, I chuckled when his name flashed up giant on screen and it just said Pothead. I was like, all right, you got me, guys. You got me.
How much of the game are you playing, like a full build of the game, or is it like...
No. This is a preview build. So it plays up until like the first major boss battle. I don't think I'm too far off it at the moment. I hold up my daughter in front of my face once again and say, "Hey, new dad." But I do, and she vomits on my PC. I will definitely be going back and playing through to the end of this preview. They also, like, I've found a couple as I've been making my way through of like little secrets that they've peppered around the game, and so I think this is like for you, Mr. Completionist. You are going to love this game for like. To track down all these little like bits and pieces. It's all in isometric point of view, and it was cool. One of the secrets I found is like there's like a pillar of land in front of you, and I realized that you can actually make your way around the corner of the pillar, and when you do that, the whole view of the game shifts to be around the pillar. Like, just cool little camera tricks like that, really well thought out. And clearly, looking at the inventory screen, there's a bunch of new weapons you get to collect. Like, on top of your bow and arrow skill, there's going to be a few other skills that you get to collect that are going to make combat, I reckon, really interesting. You earn up currency from enemies you defeat, and at various points in levels, you can unlock doors that take you back to the bureau and go talk to a crow that like you can purchase upgrades to your abilities from them. So you can like buy damage upgrades and speed upgrades and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
From what I've played thus far, this is a shoo-in for Game of the Year list, and it's really feeling like a top five at this point in time.
Damn, bro. I'm very excited for it.
I cannot wait for you to play this game. I reckon like you're absolutely going to love
me
it.
Me-ass game.
Mm.
Yeah, the latter half of this year is pretty stacked for like potential Game of the Years for me. It's pretty exciting.
Mm. I've already got a backlog. Like, I really want to play Minute of Islands. I really want to play The Magnificent Truffle Pigs. Like, I think Minute of Islands looks good. Minute of Islands has a lot of potential.
Okay, very good, very exciting. But I'm ecstatic to know that Death's Door is the good shit.
Oh, the absolute such good shit. And I've been hanging on for talking about this game. I've wanted to like sing its praises for a couple of weeks now.
That's amazing. Well, that's Death's Door again. It comes out on July 20.
Yep, on Xbox and PC Windows, at this point in time.
I'm looking forward to just like I feel like a bunch of Devolver games are coming out like in the next couple of months, which is super exciting. They haven't said if it's Game Pass or not.
My gut instinct is it's got to be Death Pass. It's got to be Game Pass. Pre-order now. Now there's nothing on the Xbox side.
Yeah, they haven't said anything yet. So
I've pulled up the Xbox page and it's got screenshots and I'm just like, oh god damn, this game looks good. as in visually, it is fantastic, obviously, for everything, but it looks so nice. And the enemy design is fantastic. I had one battle that was against like a door.
Mm-hmm.
And the door turned into like this big robot. Just really, really cool. I just fought a knight this morning where it has a shield on each of its arms and it can like combine the shield to look like a mouth in front of its body. And then when it pulls the shields away, the middle of its body actually is a mouth.
I've just found an interview from earlier this year on a website called Stiviver. And they interviewed Acid Nerve and they said, is Death's Door planned for Xbox Game Pass? And Acid Nerve said, no, it is not planned for Game Pass.
So well, there you go, guys. Bummer, but buy this goddamn game.
Yep. Will do, John. Will do. So that is it for our reviews of games so far this week. But before we go, we have another email in what I like to refer to as the Linux saga.
Oh my God, really?
This one comes from Joel, and the subject is, I am a Linux user. Hi, John and Levins. I am an avid Linux user. I use Linux every day. As a full-stack web developer, I dare say if Linux and the open-source BSDs didn't exist, my job would be a living hell. That being said, I haven't touched a graphical user interface on Linux in probably 8 years. Here's the thing about Linux. To be pedantic, Linux isn't an OS. It's a kernel. It's just the base of an operating system on which distributions like Ubuntu and Red Hat are built. So far, I'm understanding about 80% of the words Joel is using.
Sure.
The desktop environment could be any number of interfaces, all of which IMO are pretty bad. So, at present, I really wouldn't recommend normal folks use Linux for their main computer. Some history you might not care about. I definitely don't, but I'm going to read it anyway, John, because I appreciate the hell out of this.
Sick.
In the early 2010s, there was a push to make Linux be a tablet and phone OS, which means all the energy behind making the GUI work well on a desktop was redirected to making it work on touchscreens. The result was that the major desktop environments kind of went to shit. There's still some decent ones out there, but being smaller projects, they aren't as well maintained as the big boys. It's gotten better in recent years as the table market has faded, but it's still not to the level of macOS or Windows. Love the show and keep roasting Linux if you like, Joel. There you go. There's your permission, John.
It was funny at the beginning of the email where it's like, I am a Linux user. I'm like, okay, waiting for it. I'm a full stack web developer. There it is. Okay. If he was like, I'm a chef, I'd be like, whoa, okay, what the hell's going on? Why are you using Linux?
Every dish I cook is made with Linux.
Yeah. I totally get why this guy uses Linux. It's his job, essentially.
Joel, I would love to add you to the All the Small Games Discord. So I'm going to send you an invite. If you'd like to, anyone listening would like to join our Discord, you can immediately if you sign up to our Patreon. But new rule: if you send in an email that we read out on the show, we'll give you an invite to our Discord community, and you can talk about indie games all day with me and John and a lovely little collection of our listeners as well. The way to email us is allthesmallgames@gmail.com. You can also get in touch with us via Facebook, facebook.com/allthesmallgames, or on Twitter, we are @allthesmallgame. If you want to find us individually, I'm @levdog, John is @16tacos on both Instagram and Twitter. And, of course, I got a couple other podcasts you might want to check out. One's called Hey Fam, and one is called Serious Issues. Thanks so much, John, for recording with me today.
No worries. Another great episode. Wah!
Yeah, loved one it. Of the best. One of the best. Just off out the gate with that beautiful impersonation of a British person.
I cannot wait for the email we get next week where it's like, hi, I'm a British person.
Yeah, and I am I am a British person.
I will stop as a British person and a Unix user. I will no longer listen to your podcast.
The goal is for the guy who runs Nintendo Life to write in and say, I am the Nintendo Life guy. And then say, Levins, I want you to know that whenever I address my audience with hello, lovely people, I'm talking about every single person in the universe except you from now on.
And then we add him to the Discord.
Welcome to the Discord, lovely people. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.